December 2nd, 2021, is the Watt for Pedro Show.
Well, I tell you, I had some trouble at that time. I did a foolish thing. I got dissatisfied with my mouthpiece. And I had some work done on this thing. And instead of making it better, it ruined it. And it really it discouraged me, you know, a little bit, because I couldn't. There were certain aspects of that, of playing that certain fast thing that I was reaching for, that I couldn't get, you know, pushed because I damaged this thing. So I just had to curtail it.
Actually,
I never found another. But after so much of just laying around and making these kind of things, I said, well, what the hell, you know? I might as well go ahead and do the best I can.
Pedro Show, happy Thursday. Sorry, space in there. We listened to, heard John Coltrane talk to Frank Kosky on November 6th about his sax mouthpiece. He made a mistake. It happens even people like John Coltrane. thing is, that man, when bullshit his way out of it, you know, he, incredible inspiration. Then Ivan Julian, Can't Help Myself.
Yeah.
And people, you can tell I ain't man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Ivan Julian. Welcome aboard, Ivan.
It's funny you talk about Coltrane because I've been listening to Lush Life lately.
Oh, great album.
I think it's blowing me away, you know. I mean, because I got to say, I haven't heard a lot of Coltrane over the years. I mean, I know of them, of course. And I had this album, and I put it on. And it's like, whoa, this is, like, amazing.
Yeah, you know, I was telling you off air that been doing the show 20 years, 6 months. I started every edition with some kind of John Coltrane. I didn't know about him until the movement. About the same time I found out about, well, Voidoids a little earlier, but not much. And I actually thought he was an older punk rocker. I didn't know he was dead. I didn't, you know, I kept reading housing and shit, you know. I didn't know John Fogerty's shirts, you know, lumberjacks and farmers. I didn't know. I thought that was his rock and roll. You know, nobody's to hip you to stuff. It's hard to know.
Well, I know. Another guy is Albert Eiler. I don't know if he's...
Oh, yeah. He played at his funeral.
What?
Yeah, he played at his funeral. Ornette Coleman and Albert Eiler played at the John Coltrane's funeral in New York City.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
He wrote a song for him and everything. And they found him in the estuary. I guess they call it the East River, but that's always been a mystery. And
I've talked to people about that I thought were in the know, and I've still heard various answers. Like, I mean, he owed people money. They didn't like who he was playing with. I mean, so no one
and
knows.
And something about his brother, right? There's something involved with that. I've heard.
You never know.
No, but these cats took chances, you know. That was not a popular thing. They were calling John Coltrane. He called up Albert Eiler after he did Ascension. And he said, hey, man, I just made a record that sounded like you. I mean, can you imagine getting a call? What Albert Eiler tells him is, no, man, you were sounding like yourself. What you were doing was shouting for spiritual unity. Just incredible stuff. Can I ask you your earliest musical recollection?
It's a weird one. I was 3 years old, and my older cousin was babysitting me, and we were in the car, and I was sitting on her lap in the front seat, and Leslie Gore's "It's My Party" came on the radio.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
You know, and yeah. I always loved that song. It's like,
oh yeah.
And the more I learn about her, the more I love her too. You know.
Oh yeah, that's a story. A lot of those cats in those days, crimey. Okay, yeah. So.
But yeah. I have a question for you. Have you ever heard? Have you ever heard Charlie Parker's Dial Sessions?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
That cat.
Were he spinning around in circles because he's out there, I think, in Tarzana somewhere in California.
Yeah, he has. I was going to say there's a chapter of his life. Actually, they put him in Camarillo, right? He tried to swallow iodine and stuff, and when he got out, that's when John Coltrane got to jam with him at a house and. I think Redondo Beach, kind of near where my Missing Man guitar player. But, yeah, he was a big inspiration for all the guys. The thing was, he was fucked up and shit, so people got involved with that and to play like him. And I think that's where John Coltrane was really important when he quit. And what Richard Meltzer told me was, he kicked dope out of the temple. Like, you could quit and actually get better. And I actually quits the year after Mr. Parker passes away. I think they gave him electroshock therapy to stop the shit in Camarillo.
Yeah, because if you listen to that recording, it's like the most tragic thing. And it's like it's a lesson for all of us that try to play solos.
Yeah.
You know, to encapsulate where you are, because you can hear him spinning around, going off mic, just losing it, you know?
Yeah,
and
he's
played this song that, Loverman, that sounds absolutely nothing like Loverman. He's taking it to a completely different place.
I read it happened to Bud Powell, too, the piano man, when they gave him electric shock. He's never the same. You know, and Lou Reed talked about it in the Victor Bachris book. I don't know if they stopped doing that shit, right?
Yeah.
Did did they have musical instruments?
You mean in the wards or whatever?
Where you grew up in the pad, the house?
Oh, no. My father was a Navy guy, you know, a career Navy guy. But he did love jazz, though, and he bought me my first instrument, which was a saxophone.
Wow.
You know, so he wanted, he loved Parker. He loved Stan Getz. He got me the saxophone when I was like kind of in middle school or something like that. And also, I mean, there were, whenever I saw an instrument, I was always intrigued with it because, I was on this ship once because we were being evacuated from Cuba. This is a long another story. And there's a piano down in the, you know, in the hull of the ship that all the teenagers, and I wasn't one at the time, used to go down and play on, and they would play Peter Gunn, you know. Exactly.
My pop was a machinist mate in the Navy. That's a trip. That's a trip because there's something about tour that's kind of like sailors.
It's very much like that. It's very much like that. You know, you go around and you kind of absorb different cultures and try to get into or stay out of trouble, and then you pack up and go to the next one.
Right, right. John Coltrane's first recording was when he was in the Navy in Hawaii.
Wow.
Interesting connections, yeah, that way. So, your pop gets you the sax. Does he? Is it the thing like I get you this? You know, you're going to take lessons.
No, well, it was kind of. It was back like they don't do this anymore. This is New York. It was back when schools had bands.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
I was going to ask you if you were in the choir, the marching band or something.
Yeah, I never got into the marching band. I don't like the cold, and I don't like marching around with a thing. You know.
I ask people that stuff because it's trippy how the paths we are on, that gets us to where we're now. You know?
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I remember my mother lived down in Southern Virginia, and there's a small Baptist church, and they were rocking in there, you know? I mean, yeah. And I was always envious that I couldn't go in and play with them and be, you know, part of the church choir or part of the church band. I never got up the nerve.
And so in class, there was like a jazz band or a school band that had...
It was a school band, and they were trying to groom me to become a part of the orchestra, state orchestra. Okay. You know, it's because what happened is, like, I was playing the saxophone, and then one day someone broke into the school and stole a bunch of instruments, including mine, because they were locked up in a room. So then this guy, the instructor, Mr. James Schrote, I never forget, he was great. He really was the early mentor, and he brought me over to this case, and he opened it up, and he goes, "You can play this." And I said, "What is it?" He goes, "It's a bassoon."
Oh, wow. You know what bassoons are? You know, Barcelona, that Gaudi, that Familia Sagrada church thing? You know, usually churches have angels playing harps. They're playing bassoons at the hatch. One of the hatches. Go on.
Wow. It's a cool instrument, you know. And I mean, you'll appreciate that. It's a cool instrument. And one reason is that you're sitting on your strap. You know, you don't really wear the strap around your neck. You sit on it.
Right.
And I learned the bass club.
Oh, wow. That's right.
You know, I mean, I thought this is a whole new thing. It was exciting.
Down there with the bone. The other double reed is the oboe, right?
Yeah, I tried playing that. That's rough.
You know what was a trip? Roxy Music had, sometimes Andy McKay would rock the oboe.
yeah, because he was a total reed guy, you know?
Yeah.
All that stuff, you know?
I heard they have a problem with strokes and stuff because you got to really focus your breath. French horn, too. Because the small mouthpiece. What about after school, not graduation, but in the afternoon? The bedroom band, the garage band, the basement band. Did you do any of that? Well, you got to tell me how you got on guitar.
Well, I mean, I reached an age where, I couldn't relate to, I couldn't communicate with any of my peers. You know, nobody wanted to hear about the bassoon. And besides that, I grew up with a guy named Ted Nicely. He produced Fugazi, whatever.
Yeah.
Him and I literally grew up together pretty much in the same house. We were exchanging music back and forth, you know, and like I turned him on, I had an Electric Flag record, et cetera. So, he started a band, and then they wanted me to sing, and I was, I think, 13 at the time, something like that.
Wow.
And it was a Led Zeppelin cover band.
Okay.
But then my voice changed.
It happens. I heard Rush started out that way, the guy saying, but his voice didn't change.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. So then I thought, well, I'm just going to learn the guitar. You know, I got to play something. You know, like John Lee Hooker says, it's in a minute, got to come out.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Okay, your first guitar, how'd you get it? What kind was it?
It was a Gibson SG standard, I believe it was. Yeah,
it's in those pictures on the Void Blank Generation?
Yeah. I still had it. Yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
that's your first guitar. Okay.
That's my first guitar.
And what kind of amp?
Oh God. An acoustic 150. Please forgive me.
Whoa. Why not? You know, anything that makes sound.
It sounded like a mosquito.
I can imagine. So now how'd you learn? Did you bring over the stuff from the reeds or did you had to just start over with this? Well, at least you had music and rhythm and that stuff.
I had music available and I mean, at a certain point you have to decide, okay, well, which direction are you going to go with this? And, I was totally into the Stones, you know, and then Keith's playing.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say how I learned to play the electric guitar is I saw Gimme Shelter and I counted it 57 times.
Okay.
You know, just go and watch his hands and go, okay, because, you know, there's various ways you can voice something on a guitar.
Absolutely.
And you know, and then him with his open tunings and everything like that, which brings you back. You know, it brings you back to some of his idols, like, you know, Peter White and everything.
Well, I heard Ry Cooder has something to do with that, and it's like banjo tunings, actually. That's why he went to the five strings. But, you know, I tell people on my bass guitar, I've got the same A and B note on every string, and they sound all different.
Exactly. Because
they're fatter and skinnier, right? And they're further up or down the neck. It's trippy about our instruments. I've really gotten to the point where bass ain't four-string guitar to me. I'm really getting to this idea of four-string drum set, but they do share some things. I think Mr. Fender.
Yeah, that's how James Brown thought of it, you know.
Did he? Oh, well, you can tell by his compositions. Yeah. They're beautiful. I saw him play with three trap guys playing the same part. You know how tight you got to do without flams for that shit?
Oh, God.
Because he was a drummer, man. You gave me music from your new thing here. Here's Cut Me Loose.
Was it a Tuesday when you said that you don't want me? And a Thursday when you pushed me down the stairs? Friday, it must have been my pride that came to say, baby, it can't be like this everywhere. So I kissed you and I put you on the train. You bit me and you said we meet again. And then I heard about the lies that you told in Genocide. When you went down, I said I heard about the lies that you told in Genocide. Famous is the hell that you caused in Jacksonville. So can't you cut me loose, baby? Come on and cut me loose.
You know why? I've got to do this. We'll be right back.
Yeah! your farmhouse with our song. We've been separated, baby, far too long. I know you will see. Well, pretty thing, well, pluck out your diamond. Throw me your ring, yeah, I came to play. All out from the fun house. Wow! Being a baller, well, love and joy. Do I have to tell you what I'm thinking of? Do I dare to whoop you? I love every little baby knows just what I mean. You're never in this phony plastic. Make believe.
No. Now, Moldy Diana, I know that this is a reference to something, so I want you to explain what it is. I also know you as Moldy Donut. So, I mean, are you changing your name? What could it be? I quite like Moldy Donut.
Well, I've been Moldy everything. Moldy Donut. Moldy Bastard. Moldy Forwards. And then Moldy Diana's was just a playful reference to the Dead Kennedys.
Right.
So, like a popular figure in the country, and not so alive or, you know, pretty sordid. But so it's a bit of fun. That's all. It's just meant to be.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I think I'll just call you Mouldy. I quite like that. So I think Mouldy for this evening.
Yeah, that's consistent anyway.
Now, it's going to be a little bit of your bio from your social media pages. For people that aren't familiar with you, you're a stripped-down three-piece, void of banks, of processes and effects. Sounds like a homemade go-kart powered by a jet engine. Hellbeings proudly displays a blind indifference to fashions and fads. So, do you want to explain a little bit about your ethos, how the band formed, and your influences?
Sure. First of all, none of us wrote that. It's kind of hard to explain, but I like the jet engine or whatever. I said, yeah, that's very good. What was the question?
Oh, I've forgotten the question. Just explain a bit about your ethos and about what the band, what you're trying to do with the music you produce and your influences.
Okay, the ethos would be to have it stripped down as it can be, without any gimmicks, without any unnecessary effects on the guitar, for example. So the songs are kind of in their raw primal form, and that's where they want to keep it. And the songs are very, very simple. If I get an idea, I don't overqualify it. I just kind of go with it. So if it sounds like something before, it doesn't matter, because when you put your own words to it and stuff, it's all gone. Who cares anyway, you know? But up until now, I haven't whipped anyone off.
So that chunk of music started off Ivan Julian, Cut Me Loose. Then Richard Hell. This is the first. Actually, this is before the album, because I got the 7-inch out of an ad in Cream Magazine. Another World. And then, you know, I could. It was like R&B music. I could actually hear the bass parts. It was hard for me. When I met Dee Boone, he only knew Creedence, man, and I could not hear what that guy was playing. I can hear it now, but not in those days, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, they buried it, you know.
Right,
I mean?
right. So that's why I started wearing flannels. I thought if I wore the singer's shirts, maybe D. Boone would still like me.
But, I taught John Fogerty like about four, five, six, something years ago. out in New Jersey at the Sampa Theater. Man, he was smoking.
Was he? Well, I've never gotten to see him.
He was playing, like he was wailing on this guitar, you know?
Wow. He's incredible. A big inspiration on DB, but like yourself and Mr. Quine. And who else was he into? Buck Dharma. DB was a weird mixture. Buck Dharma, the guy who plays for Cloister Cult, mixed with John Fogerty and you guys. It's a trippy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, that's what music, John Coltrane talks about, music being a big reservoir, you know. Like Frank Kosky asked me, hey, Sun Ra says you're ripping him off. He goes, well, I listen to John Gilmore. There might be something to that.
Yeah.
We heard SLW, CC Watt, Give Me the Bad News. This is a collab I got from Sam Lockwood in Iowa City. Then Funhouse with my Missing Men about 3 weeks ago. First out of town gig in 20 months. And then Victoria Shen joined us on a, we had some fun with the Stooges Funhouse.
Wow.
Yeah, I got to help them for 125 months. Incredible.
Wow.
Talk about a good shift. That's a good shift. Then Zone Infinity. That's French. Sorry for destroying that language. TKO. Fresh Seb has helped these cats out. Bombas Prentin from DCA. Ride Home After Circus. Sabla, brand new from her. A Safe Journey. And Estella, November 2020 interview with the Hellbeens out of Brighton. A little excerpt. And then finally, Ivan Julian with Wild. Okay, so this band that you're playing guitar with, it's not the same guys that wanted you to sing, is it?
No. You mean now?
No, back then, when you first get the guitar.
Yeah.
They wanted you to be a singer at 13 and...
Yeah. So my voice changed, and then, they didn't want me as a guitar player.
Okay. So what do you do?
Well, I mean, I just practiced. I went and saw bands, and I practiced.
Yeah.
And I realized that, I mean, if I was going to play music in Washington, D.C., the best hope for me would be either doing the club circuit, or be getting a residency in a club, or playing weddings or something. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Being a cover band, that's what bands do there. You know?
Sure.
I can't do that. So I figured I gotta get out of here and go somewhere else. Okay. So I went to London, and the reason I went to London was to raise money to do this. I got a job in a law firm on Capitol Hill, and they would send me to New York, you know, to deliver checks, do paralegal work, stuff like that. And I would rush through that, and then I would run to Max's Kansas City or someplace and try to see some band. And New York was a very hard place back then.
Oh, that, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking like 74 or something like that.
Okay.
So, I mean, and there was a TV show called a David Susskind Show.
Yeah.
And he would always have Johnny Thunders on.
Yeah.
And Sable Starr, you know, as it was kind of like, you know, under cultural blah, 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 representative or something like that. So, you know, I'm seeing these people on TV. So I'm coming up to New York, and all of a sudden I see Johnny Thunders walking across Union Square with no coat and no guitar case. I'm going, I'm not moving here. this is brutal, man. Yeah. You know? And especially then, because I thought, you know, you can have no coat, but you cannot walk around in the wintertime with no guitar case. You just can't do it, you know?
The other guitar man in television, Mr. Lloyd, he told me about walking from the city, San Francisco, to SoCal without a case. He had a suitcase with clothes in one hand and the guitar in the other, and then he loses the suitcase. He's just carrying this.
Oh,
400 fucking miles. So what do you do?
So I worked at the firm, practiced, saw Gimme Shelter.
Right.
And, 37. Yeah, and then bought a one-way ticket to London, you know. And
okay.
And then I went there, and there my job was to go out every night and look at bands and try to form, you know, put an ad in the paper and try to get in a band. And how this worked out was I was at this pub called Town and Country. I don't know. I think it was one of my last resorts because I'd been there a month, and actually, I didn't buy a one-way ticket. I wanted to but they wouldn't let me do that. Not to mention the fact that I was 20 years old. It's like, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea. So, but So I'm in this pub called Town and Country, and I'm at the bar, and these two ladies came up to me and said, like, you know, why are you here? I said, well, blah, 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 I'm trying to get in the band. So they said, okay, we're going to take you home, we're going to pick you up in the morning, and we're going to take you to this rehearsal studio called Manny's Rehearsal Studio.
I've been there with Stooges.
That's cool, because I talk to people, and they go, no, it couldn't have existed because it's not on the internet and stuff like that. It's like, no, it was there. I was there. I know it's there, you know? Yeah, cool. So, what was the guy's name was Manny, right? The Brandon,
yeah,
you remember?
I think so. Yeah.
He's a great guy. That's so cool that you were there. Yeah, so we're gonna pick you up in the morning. We're going to take you to Manny's rehearsal studio. We're going to introduce you to Manny. And then, you'll have a good chance of meeting someone. So they took me in, and they took me down there, and Manny was a great guy, really nice. He goes, just sit here by the desk, and somebody will need a guitar player. I said, okay. He's wandering the streets, you know. So
and you had a guitar. You brought your guitar, right?
I brought my guitar, okay. Yeah. I brought my guitar, yeah.
That's probably why they didn't want the one-way ticket.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
No, when Minutemen and Black Flag first went to Europe, and the Dutch guys at the airport there, you got to show us a round ticket. You're not getting in the country. Same thing. But this was 82.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll talk about Des later. You know Des, right?
Wow, big time. Dezzo was my partner on that tour.
Yeah, he's great. He's an amazing guy. I met him when he was in the Misfits, and like he'd be on the stage like dressed up like a fucking monster, you know. And then you get him backstage, and he's like the coolest, like most mellow guy ever, you know.
Beautiful, beautiful cat.
Yeah,
really is. About his pop, Ozzy Cadena. You know, he was big with producing for Savoy and stuff, booked gigs here. I saw several gigs he booked with Tal Farlow and Tootie Heath and stuff. And his ma is still booking gigs sometimes at the Lighthouse, you know, where Miles Davis played, and there's some records.
Really?
I wouldn't shit you, Ed.
No, definitely. He never talked about that. But
he has a deep music background. And he's the first guy to play me Curtis live. He'd come to SST with all these records, all kinds of stuff. Music is music in Dez's world. And that's
exactly what
helped me break through all that doghouse shit in my head. Right? Music genre, that's a fucking handicap, man. Fuck that.
No, I know. It's a big handicap.
End of the first hour, December 2nd, 2021. Walk Peters, our special guest, Ivan Julian. Hold tight for hour two. December 2nd, 2021. It's the second hour of the Walk Peters Show.
As I look back through all the years, seems that troubles followed us from town to town, mile for mile. It's been like this for many days, as if the candles of our love have blown away. Once there was passion, now there is only bitter tears, a faded flower turned to gray. So tell me lies that were truths when love was only a child. You would rush into my arms, and I would never let you go. Tell me lies, and if only for one day, you know it wouldn't be so hard to tell me little lies, and we could live again. take and never give. Sometimes when you are fast asleep, I sit and watch you and I can't believe how beautiful you are. But I am so damn tired, and I am so afraid to wake you up and find that you don't even care. So tell me lies, tell me that you are my beautiful one, and that when I am away, you nearly cried a thousand tears. Tell me lies, and I'll be your perfect slave. You know it couldn't be so hard to tell me little lies, and we can live again. You know it couldn't be so hard to tell me little lies, and we can live again. will all last forever. Don't you see, baby? Like a beacon through the darkness, I will see across the water to your knees.
Yeah.
Just right. Someone over there is just shining the same light. So won't you tell me once again that love is good? 'Cause when you hold me in your arms,
love is good.
Right.
No? That's right. Well, for Bebo, should we start off the second hour? I've been Julian telling me lies. We weren't talking lies off air, people. We're talking about two kinds of people, those who back up and those who will.
Yeah, exactly. or another way to put it is there are those who have lost data and those who will. You know?
For your fortune teller. Okay. Ian McComb after that, Blood Money, Helvetia, The Echo Creek, D is for Desire, My Daddy Ate My Eyes, Finally Love Is Good, Ivan Julian. Okay, so at Manny's, you get a gig, you get in a band?
Yeah, so I'm there, and I'm, you know, paying my rent, basically, sitting at the desk, you know, all day, by buying Manny's scones. You know, scones, and I figured,
okay. Yeah, it's kind of a biscuit thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like a biscuit with, like, that's had the consistency of a rock. I don't know.
You're gnawing this.
It tastes like ivory soap or something.
Yeah, yeah, they're the weirdest. Yeah, maybe it's something with the tea to cool it down or some shit.
Yeah. I won't go there. But, you know, we all know. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, so, and then while I'm there, this band comes in. It's Gary Moore, who is a Canadian guitar player.
Right, right.
Yeah, and so with him was this guy, Topper Heaton.
Oh, drummer man.
So I'm talking to Topper, you know, we're hanging out, we're talking about music and all kinds of things. And then, you know, they come and they go and, you know, see you later, maybe whatever, and you see you later, Topper. And then the Foundations come in, and they're looking for a guitar player, you know. And
Foundations, wow.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, aren't you guys from Detroit? Weren't you a Motown band?
Yeah.
And they were from Barbados and from
Okay.
And Jamaica, but living in London. And they go, no man, you silly blood, no. You know, so I mean, they were like characters, but anyway, so yeah, so they say, okay, we're leaving to go on the road in 2 days. You got to learn. So this is where, like, you know, the whole Reed thing came in, you know, like in the whole the music theory came in, because the first time I'm playing an E major 7 chord, I'm like, okay, you know, so yeah, I practiced, and I was living on 46 Hestercombe Avenue in the basement of this building, because I went to Earl's Court, where someone told me if you go there, they paste on the wall, like, flats that are available, and I went, and I was living there, and, like, the place had no floor, it was a dirt floor.
Oh, you know? Shit.
But I thought everybody in England lives like this. What do I know?
The
dirt
box. Litter box.
Yeah, it was a dirt floor and a hot plate.
Damn.
So I'm down in my dungeon, and I'm, like, learning the songs, and we go out, and we start playing, and they literally toured, like, 8 days a week to 25/7. It's like, I mean, they would do everything from small, tiny pubs to dinner theaters, to concert halls. I remember once we'd gotten home at like 5 in the morning or something like that, you know, because we were driving all over England and places. And I put my head on the pillow to go to sleep, you know. And by then, they'd got me into another flat, by the way. They said, no, you can't live here. It's like,
yeah. I mean, that is heavy, because people, the listeners, you got to understand, there's a wet cold in England that's pretty intense.
Well, also, they have these gas heaters that you have to feed money into to get to work.
Right.
And you feed 50 pieces, and remember the 50 pence piece? And, you know, so, and that lasts for, like, I don't know, 20 minutes or something. I had talked about these things, man. I would go to the bank, get everything changed. I was not going to freeze. You know, I was like,
Yeah.
The damn cold there is pretty petrifying.
Right. Especially them cats from Barbados and stuff. But they were in a better pad. They got you a better pad. Okay.
Yeah, well, they got me a better pad with, I think, the conga player's brother-in-law or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And, he was a trip too. He was Irish. And when he was a kid, this is kind of heavy, when he was a kid, there was a knock at the door in Dublin, I think it was. The door, he opened the door, people pushed him out of the way, and it was the Orange Man, and they, like, basically took out his whole family with a machine gun.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, but he was a nice guy. I mean, he told me something really strange I'll never forget. He goes, I can tell if someone's Protestant or Catholic from across the street. I went, okay.
Yeah.
That's a new one, you know.
Yeah, it's an odor or something.
You know, there's like wildness everywhere. But anyway, so I'm out with them, and I'm just putting my head down on the pillow, okay? Yeah. And all of a sudden the phone rings, and it's Colin, the singer, goes, Ivan, you sleeping? You still sleeping? I got what? He goes, no, man, we got to go again. The bump, put clothes on, go back up the M1. They just played all the time. It was a good lesson for me, you know. It's like, you know, the road 101, you know.
Absolutely. And how long were you with these guys?
We went to the continent. We went to what was then Yugoslavia, and did a tour there. And I realized that once again, because my goal was, I didn't just say this before, but my goal was to be in a band and make an album and write songs. That's what I wanted. That's, you know, great. It wasn't just to play. I mean, I could have done that back in D.C.
Sure.
It was like, you know, to write some songs. So I realized they weren't going to do that.
Because you were kind of side man, side mouse role.
Yeah. I mean, they'd had their hits, you know.
Right.
Hits, you know, and like, they could tour forever on this, and, you know, they got their Bentleys for their hits, poor guys. You know,
right.
And I guess I was over there. I told him, like, you know, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah,
I need a band. So then I went on the road with the opening band, Parne Bayat, which once again, music being a reservoir, these guys were from Croatia, and you know, we had a lot of same influences and stuff like that. And I played with them until I could figure out what to do. So then that was when I decided to move to New York.
We got a lot of Croatian people here in Pedro. That's a trip.
Really?
Yeah, I'm gonna shit you. So you played with Croatian band, okay? A Barbados band, a Croatian band, and then you decide to get back to New York City. But now,
well, you know, there was this rumbling. I was here reading in Melody Maker and in the music press about the scene that was happening in New York City. You know, and I thought, you know, I didn't know any names or anything like that. I mean, like Richard or anybody, but like, I thought, I'm gonna try to do this. So. I wrote my friend that I worked with, where I worked with at the law firm, and he told me, like, if you ever need a place to stay, write, let me know.
Right.
So I wrote him from Croatia and said, hey, I need a place to stay in New York. So I came back and moved in with him and his roommates on the Upper West Side, you know, and yeah, and that's how I got here.
Okay. And, well, you know about Johnny Thunders, and Richard told me he got the idea about the CBGB thing from what the Dolls did with that
Mercer Arts Center, yeah.
I'm sorry, not Mercury. And this idea where, like a residency, right? Like everybody knew once a week there's going to be a gig here. It's the same thing. He said that. So the Dolls, I think, was important to that scene, even though they weren't really an active part of it, right?
Well, they were. I mean, they weren't part of the CBC, and I don't know why, you know, because there were kind of two factions, almost two camps. Like there was CBGB's, which was like the newer club, and there was Max's,
right, the older club.
Yeah, so you more than likely see the Dolls at Max's, and you know I'd run into Johnny and
same with Stooges. I don't think Stooges ever played CB's. It was always Max's or this Italian chow pad called Ungano's. Yeah, they were telling me the stories those guys told me.
Like, yeah, I know.
So how do you find Richard in New York City?
Well, when I moved here, I put an ad in the paper called Musicians Classified, which was kind of like, you know, just, you know, articles about people and gear for sale and stuff like that, jobs available. And on the cover was a picture of Richard in an article written by this woman, Anya Phillips, about, you know, downtown poet guy, plays the CBGBs, you know, that, you know, well-respected literary, blah, blah, blah. And my ad was in the back of the paper. So I did that, went down to see my folks for like a couple of weeks, came back, and then Quine called me.
Yeah.
So he goes, yeah, we're looking for a guitar player, and then we like your ad. My ad said, have gear, will travel, guitar player. You know, I mean, very to the point, not flowery at all, because yeah. I saw other ads that said, you know, we need a guitar player. Don't waste our time or we'll waste you. I didn't answer that ad.
No. We had something here called the Recycler coming out on Thursdays. That's where I got all my cars, all my stuff, everything.
I know the cycler, yeah, I know.
Yeah,
that.
There'd be ads in there too, and the funniest one was like, no flakes. You know, like, you're going to call up? I'm sorry, I'm a little bit flaky, but. You know, must have own transfer, must have own gear, you know, looking for a deal. We got everything but, you know, the band. Hilarious kinds of stuff. Okay, so Bob Quine, you know, I got to record once with him. Steve Shelley and Lee Ronaldo brought me into Wharton Tears, and everybody's well, they didn't say, but everybody else said, he's going to rip your head off, he's mean. And we did Johanna, Visions of Johanna Frieza, and he was the nicest man. He told me the first guy he saw play electric guitar was Buddy Holly in Akron, Ohio, the year I was born, 1957.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So, did you have to try out in front of them? And like?
Yeah, well, I went and auditioned. I mean, it's like, you know, I went and auditioned, and, you know, it was a wild audition. I mean, I've recounted this before, but it was at a place called Daily Planet, which was a rehearsal, fairly nice rehearsal space up on 30th Street in Midtown. And I walk in, and Richard's sitting there on a stool. And Mark is behind the drums, Mark Bell or Mark
Bell. Right.
He's behind the drums. And Quine is there. And and then there's two women sitting when I guess the audience section had a small chair set up like that. Both, you know, really tall, you know, fishnet stockings, the whole
Wow.
You know, and so I start playing. You know, they said, okay, we have like 2.5 songs. Okay. And I said, okay, well, what are they? And they played me You Gotta Lose.
Oh.
And then they had another one, Another World.
That's the one I played. Richard told me You Gotta Lose was the first bass line he ever wrote. That's what he told me.
That's what attracted me to the band, actually, because, you know, Quine's playing this kind of straight Chuck Berry thing, you know, like rhythm, you know. And Rich was playing this bass line that, I don't know, it reminded me of the old, like, I don't know, Betty Boop cartoons or something.
Yeah, it is trippy. It is.
It's trippy.
Boom, 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 boom. The intervals are trippy. The way he swings it is trippy.
Exactly, exactly. I love that bass line, you know. So,
yeah.
And people will sometimes knock him as a bass player. I'm like, you're insane. You know, shut up.
Well.
You know. And let's see who remembers you in 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. I think, and, you know, and he's very facing. I remember Scott Ashton telling me doing a session with him where he was trying so hard his fingers were bleeding in the studio. You know, and he's kind of down on himself, too. He let me play that Dan Electro in that Second Avenue pad. To me, he's inspirational because, the fusion and all that, you can have it, man. There's something about some kind of person, human, organic, weird, trippy. And that Another World, that bass line is so bizarre.
It is.
I love it. But it gives you guys all kinds of room and kind of launch pad, springboard. It's, man. Here, I want to play I Am Not a Drone Alone.
But I am not a drone alone.
in your backside will rust away in time. Behind the pants you're taking, the mission bell's a toe. And down the road there's Mary, and God, she's moving slow. But I am not grown.
Show that chunk of music. I'm not a drone. Alone.
Alone.
Parenthetical. I'm in tune. And then from the second song from that Orca 7-inch, I belong to blank generation. I remember there was a number in that Cream ad said, call hell, and I called and he answered and I got scared and hung up. I said, you hell? He said, yeah, I hung up. I was like 17, 18 years old, I think I was 18.
Oh, that's funny.
Really, yeah. And then Swing Your Lanterns, Ivan Julian. So, yeah, what a pants sugar having to play like. Okay, so I guess you made it, right? So what's the first void?
Well, what happened was, I mean, you know, they're showing me the songs and I'm playing. And, you know, I don't know one way or the other yet. And actually, I thought Bob was Richard and Richard was Bob because they're both kind of the same kind of glasses on.
Yeah, right.
And Bob seemed to be running the rehearsal. So I thought, oh, maybe this is Richard Hill. Like, you know, I mean, I didn't know. Whatever. It turned out that, of course, Richard was Richard. He was just, you know, not very active at the time. but in between all this, the two girls would start fighting.
Of course.
Dragged down, like, rolling on the floor.
Oh,
floor,
man.
Hitting each other, you know, and I go, wow. You know? I mean,
it's an interesting scene.
Thing, this is New York just like I pictured it, you know? So Mark would get up from the drums, he'd go over there and separate them, okay, and then put them further apart, and then they start again. And then, you know, and then he'd go back and he'd take a swig of vodka from his pint, and, you know, so that was my first audition. And so then I'm packing up my guitar, and I had a Dan Armstrong at the time, which I loved. I did love it.
You mean them clear plastic ones?
Yeah.
They're heavy, right?
They're heavy, and the reason I stopped using it was, especially live, it's basically thick acrylic plexiglass over the body on and the neck. So if you moved around, it was like having a giant cinder block and a toothpick. So the neck would, you know.
I've seen Keith
and
pictures
of
Keith.
It only made one sound, but the sound was great.
Pictures of Keith playing them for a little bit.
Well, yeah, that's why I had to get one, no?
Yeah, right, of course. Okay, so you're putting it away.
Yeah, putting it away, and Quine comes over, and he looks at my guitar in the case and goes, we really want you to have you in the band. I said, really? Okay. And I said, well, are you going to tour? He goes, and he gave me the plan. The plan was that they were signed with Richard Goddard for a production deal. And they were getting a salary, and they were to, like, to rehearse for a couple of months and then make an EP or a single. And then use that to get signed to a major label. And that was their plan. And then in a month or two, play CBGBs. And I thought, that sounds okay. You know, they have a direction. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So then I started rehearsal with them. What was supposed to be 1 or 2 months turned into 6 because Richard needed to rehearse his bass. We rehearsed 3 songs for 6 months. You know,
the woodshed.
It's that funny. Look back on it. It's that funny. I didn't think it was funny at the time.
No, I can imagine. I can imagine, but
you know,
yeah, music's a trippy thing. We're gonna build this. Okay.
Yeah, you know, because you know, Richard, he needed time to work out his bass parts. And,
sure.
And I marvel at any bass player. That can sing and play bass at the same time. I can't do it.
You just got to beat it into yourself. You can't think. You just prack, and they get like kind of a, I don't know, ambidextrous, like one doesn't know what the other one's doing, because if you're aware, it fucks you up. Because I have to beat it into my muscle, what I call the muscle memory. It can't be in the thinking memory. That's the way I do it. And you do enough
practice,
and it just gets beaten into your flesh.
No, I understand. Kind of like playing the piano in a way.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. The two hands.
Yeah.
Somehow they're working together, but if your mind gets in the way, it fucks it up. You can't.
Yeah, so true.
You train yourself. Okay. So you get these 3 songs, finally.
Yeah, we nail them.
for Terry York, right?
Yeah, it was on Terry York's label, Ork Records. That's true.
Right.
Yeah,
right. And then you signed with Seymour.
Then we signed with Seymour, and that was another dumb elongated thing because the record was supposed to come out in June.
Yeah.
And we had to wait for Seymour. I think Passport Records was his label. I forget. It was supposed to come out in June. We had to wait for him to get his distribution deal with Warner's.
Oh, for Sire.
Yeah, Sire, exactly. Yeah, because I think it was Passport Records was the name of the label, right. And then it became Sire on Warner. So therefore, from June until I think the fall sometime, we're just sitting around. You know, I'm like, what?
Did you do any gigs?
We did CBs. Yeah, we did do CBs.
Can you tell me about your first Voidoid gig?
CBs back when they didn't have the big stage. The stage was about a foot high.
Richard Lloyd told me he helped build that thing. It's his design.
And Richard seemed to have a following. People came there and all that. You know, and there was a pool table on the side of the stage. You know, so people were playing pool while we're playing, looking up at us going, what the fuck is this? You know, I was like, you know. We did the songs, and it was good. It was good. Nothing really memorable happened except we played, and then Richard pulled it off, you know, and it got more memorable later on, you know. But
was it scary for you?
No.
But it was different than playing with the Barbados guys, right?
Well, yeah, but I played with other people. It's like what I do is play music, you know. I mean,
oh yeah, but we're talking about you were. I mean, you did have those tours with those guys under your belt, but you're still kind of new at it, right?
No, I just don't think like that. I don't know.
Okay,
like,
okay.
I'm just trying to put myself
in your shoes. I would have been shit in a pecan log.
No, I just like, you know, just, I mean, I'm here to play the guitar, and I mean, if I...
That's great.
I get jittery if I play like a Howard Hall, like, I mean, Radio City Music Hall or something like that. There's a place called Kane's, I think, in Oklahoma somewhere. Uh-huh. That's like... It's a giant dance hall where Buddy Holly and Little Richard and all those people used to play. Now, I get nervous about that.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to disgrace the place, you know?
That was like me with Stooges, like having a nightmare where there's a headstone at a graveyard. All it says on it is fucked up a Stooges gig. I'm going to be buried at sea anyway. Ivan, we're at the end of the second hour, December 2, 2021. Dish Watt Peters, for special guest. I, Julian, hold tight, man. 3. December 2, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Peters Show.
Well, it rained outside Ogala, where most people seldom go. You sat me down and told me all I loved alone. And it was just this side of winter, where the red rocks meet the sky. You He said, I'll meet you in Kazala, and then I'll tell you why. I went to the high place. The north wind was in my face. My shirt was stained with memories from the valley below. And I wish that it was springtime, 'cause how far I had to go. Had an old-fashioned suitcase made out of shiny clothes. In Kazala, heard you said so. By my kindness, from strangers on the way. Just like yesterday. As she put it on the shelf, she said, one thing you must know is, baby, save some for yourself. And she don't care how long I'll be gone. The life of the party and the girl that no one knows was making plans in the twilight to leave before it snows. And I'll meet you in Kazala, 'cause you said so. Outside Ogala,
from a distance, one man did say, all died by going tall.
say it, let alone come ask him for. Just trying to live another day. But now it's far back tail between your legs. Another empire in the grave. Pretend if nothing's happening. Pretend it like the day has been saved. But it ain't.
Watford Pedro Show. Start our third hour. Cazala or Cazalla? Is it Espanol?
Cazala.
Cazala, okay.
Everyone has a problem with that.
Well, you know, the Caballo.
The French label even spelled it wrong on the pressing. I said, jeez, man.
Okay. I fuck up so many languages. That's why. Agnew Julian, you got to lose. This is the third song from that Terry York 7-inch. Yeah, the people put it out in Chicago. What are they called? Numero? Big group of all his stuff from that Ork label. Jad Fair after that, Goodbye. Springtime with Killing of the Village Idiot. And finally, Voodoo, Chris, Avin Julian. Look, I could talk to you a billion years about all those old days stories and stuff, but we got to talk about this new album. Please.
Yes. Well, I mean, I had some health issues that a lot of people know about, like a couple of years ago. And while I was,
this terrified me. It terrified me.
It terrified me too, pal.
Yeah, I imagine.
You know, and while I was languishing there, that's a weird word, I find.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, it sounds like something that you would want to do, but no.
No.
You know? But I thought, okay, there's so much music you haven't put out, and so, you know, you've been producing and doing all sorts of stuff. If you walk away from this, you've got to keep making records. And this is a culmination of that. You know, songs I had from before, and then songs, some new songs I wrote. And I have a recording studio. It's called Super Giraffe Sound in Brooklyn. And I just went in and started playing and writing and singing and calling friends in. And, and made this record called Swing Your Lanterns.
And was it like every tune had its own band, or was there a core band of your buddies?
There's four drummers on the record.
Whoa, okay.
You know, but other than that, there's a core band, and most of it's me. I had a couple of bass players come in. You know, and I did this on my last record, The Naked Flame, too. I mean, there was only one rhythm section. But when I read about records I really love, you find out that all these people are playing different things on it, that were around the band as opposed to the band. For instance, Jimmy Miller on
I was going to say about Sympathy for the Devil at the Olympic Studio.
Yeah. Like
Charlie Watts says, you fucking play it then, or something. He did.
Yeah, he did. He did the fills and tumbling dice at the end. I mean, yeah.
Right. Like,
so, ever since I learned that, I got, sometimes, especially on The Naked Flame on the last album, I had people come in, and if I saw something lying around, I'd go, you play that, and just see what happens. And they would come up with this great stuff on an instrument they barely touched.
Whoa.
So there isn't really... The core band is basically me and some other people, friends of mine that had come in, you know.
And you were the producer, man, right? Shot Cars.
Yeah.
I didn't
master this myself, though, because I wanted it out on vinyl.
Yeah.
And I'll give myself away. I mean, you know, I can master and I master for other people, but I wanted someone that really knew what they were doing. I called Greg Calvi.
Ah, yeah.
You know, and he's great. So he did that.
And like you were saying, you had a backlog of songs. You didn't write all these songs for this album for the thing. Some were from before.
Yeah. And I thought they were never released, and I thought they should come out. I mean, and they were re-recorded though. It's not like I used old recordings; they were re-recorded.
But yeah, I understand. The source was like when. Do you keep a backlog of lyrics, like a book of words, or voice memos with riffs?
Yeah. I do. I mean, and sometimes I go through them and get ideas. I'm constantly writing. I love legal pads. You know.
Yeah. Well, do you build demos?
I mean, I have a studio now.
Yeah.
I got to admit, I liked it better when I had a 4-track cassette player.
Right.
Or cassette recorder, I should say, when I could just limit myself and get the idea down. And get it. For some of this stuff, much like the Ork record, I think sounds has its own qualities that are better than the finished product, you know? I listened to the Ork record not too long ago, like a year or so ago, and I go, wow, this has all kinds of, edge and,
It really does. It's a great record, man. It's great sounds. I mean, I like the album too, though. The problem I had was the second album that was produced, especially the drums.
Well,
sound.
I, well, I wasn't there for that, you know?
Yeah, I know. I heard stories about it and stuff. And,
yeah.
But there was an 80s thing with this gated reverb on snares that dates that music so hard. What were they thinking? Like Duran Duran. I mean, the great musicians and stuff, it was the sound. I want to play Love Affair here.
Across our tiny room, into our hearts, it makes us angry. What can you do when a love affair is over? What can you do when a love affair is through? Just like the other day, I watch the fire build inside you. Then our unspoken war that we wage through the door of the room, we once ignited. I close my eyes and I see magic men and you, and we can't believe in each other. What can you do when a love affair is over? What can you do when a love affair is through? Now our soul, they are divided. I live for me, and you live for you. As gifts you bring, flying on broken wings, we sigh at everything, 'cause our hearts, they break together. What can we do when a love affair is over? What can we do when a love affair?
Felt odd to be dismembered. like a glowless cat. I needed and pulled to my loafer, ripe, burned and cold. What happened in my feet? You said, oh my sweet, you lost your fingers last September. Thank you.
here to try to deceive you. I came to these ashes just to be by your side. Come on and take my hand and try to be courageous. The sparks may fly, so baby, close your eyes. I'm burning down real slow, and baby, let it go. Cause I just wanna get close to the naked flame of your love. Yeah. Without you, I curse the day, cause you're so far away. I want to be head on inside your fingers. Oh, that's right. And I whimper like a dog when you say stay. Hey.
Music for this edition, Love Affair from Ivan Julian, then Just Joy with a Love Song, Godspeed You Black Emperor, Piss Crowns Are Trebled, and finally, The Naked Flame, because you only gave me 10, right, the new album's only got 10 tunes, so I found another one from the last record, maybe 10, 11 years ago?
Yeah.
And that was a good band, that was a smoking band, though, the one I saw in the video with the lady on bass.
Yeah. That's Capsula from, they're actually from Argentina, but they live in Spain.
Oh, okay.
You know? And they kind of inspired that record because I produced their band and they said, well, you know, do you have any stuff that you do? And I go, yeah, and I had some demos. So I sent them to them and they said, okay, we're going to make a record. And they played all the stuff like amazingly. And yeah. I delivered like, you know, guitar, bass and drums to me and I did the rest. But like, they're a really great band. They really are. If you want to go to a place where people take music really seriously, especially rock and roll really seriously, go to Spain.
Oh, yeah. I know about that. I've toured several times. I got buddies there. Yeah. Some are operating studios. Well, this guy's a Chile guy, but he lives in Barcelona, and he's got his own studio and mastering room. And yeah, very, very motivated cats.
That's
you would
so
not
true.
Believe some of the scenes, like kind of squat thing, DIY, and really industrious and really neat people to be around, man. Inspiring. So, you got a big gig coming?
Yeah, I got a gig at City Winery in New York this Sunday, December 5th, and I've got an 8-piece band.
Whoa!
You know, it's like just various versions of me playing all the other stuff, you know, I guess, you know.
I know. You've been
practicing,
anyway, right? You've been getting ready for the gig. It's just in a couple days.
Yeah, I'm like getting ready for the gig. We're rehearsing all the time because They approached me about this, and you know, with what's going on with COVID and everything, I hadn't really thought about doing gigs, but the record's coming out, but I have to do that.
Yeah.
But I had a month to basically get a band together and make it sound like we've been playing for years, you know.
Whoa.
You know.
That's
so we've been.
You know, some cats can do that though.
I've been
in situations where I couldn't believe it. I thought, go shit all over ourselves, and these guys. That's what's good about an ensemble, man. If you got, especially people who are committed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not only man alone.
One of the guys is. Do you know James Mastro?
No.
No, he plays with the Ian Hunter. He's one of the guys. Yeah,
the guy from Mapa Hooper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I think he lives in Connecticut.
Yeah. I've seen him a few times, and you know, and he's great. It's amazing. He still does his thing. He's like 70 something years old.
Right.
Yeah. So we're gonna be playing there. Come on down if you're within flying distance, if you can. You know, love to see you.
I would love to be there. Just about 2,300 miles away.
yeah, right, exactly. So, that's why God made airplanes.
That's right. And I did my first one three weeks ago in 20 months. And I was afraid. But I tell you, I was glad people were together. I thought there was going to be a bunch of fighting and bullshit, but luckily it was calm.
Oh, that's cool.
I didn't know what it was going to be like. You read these stories about people going off to just try to get public health together. I don't know why it's got to be an issue.
I know, man. God, I don't get it either. When I was a kid, they said, okay, take this sugar cube and eat it and shut up. For polio, it was like, okay, well, then. What's the issue?
We had a president who couldn't walk because of that, right? And then
exactly.
Charlie Christian, right, gets taken out at 25 from TB. They didn't have the vaccine yet.
Exactly.
Charlie Christian. I was reading with Charlie Parker, and both him and Diz give him credit for bebop, not a horn guy, a guitar guy, because he had an amplifier. You could play single note lines for the first time.
Yeah.
Our guys used to have to pound it out in the rhythm section with the drum, the bass, and piano. The horns
exactly.
were so fucking loud, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And come up with chords that you could be heard, G711 or something.
It's like, jump, 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 jump. Like the eighth note kind of wailing shit. Oh, man. It's trippy. When you like how music's been organized to deal with the technology of the time. Anyway, Charcoal's been a big pioneer. But I would consider you a pioneer. That stuff you played with the Voidoids, and then the stuff with the new record, too, and the emotional thing behind it, the story, the fourth act of the life of, Lee Rinaldo likes to be Shakespeare, first act, definitely not the third act, might be a fifth act, this kind of shit. But I had the same thing. I wrote an opera about almost getting taken out 42 by the sickness, and music's a lifeline.
It's a reservoir. It's a lifeline. I mean, if you're lucky enough to be able to play it and love it, then it's a good thing to have in your life. I mean, I remember once I was going through something and I listened to Sad Eye Lady of the Lowlands for 2 days straight.
Do you have another album?
That's an amazing song. It's even more amazing when you try to play it.
Yeah.
And, because it's not really that complex once you figure it out. But he uses a capo, of course.
Yeah,
okay. And then it all comes to you, and then you can't stop playing it. It's like, whoa, this is so cool,
There is something about that. You know, open strings. When you make things around open string things, that's a trip,
It is.
You're using the fundamental of that instrument. You're not imposing some kind of, you're dealing with how it's made. Something else. Do you have another album planned? I know some people, as soon as they get one done, they start,
Not this time. I'm not going to get distracted, okay?
Okay. Okay, when you do...
I'm working on another album called Speechless, and it's instrumental.
Oh, wow. Great.
I had this job writing music. For theater and stuff like that. I don't want to think about it too much. But anyway, I have this stuff, around, because every day I would wake up and write something. So it's there, and I'm going to, you know, have some string players come in and stuff like that, but not what you expect. And, you know, speaking of the making of things, I just want to say, Quine and my vision for the Voidoids was, or model, I should say, was the Yardbirds.
Whoa.
Because the idea is, okay, we're going to have two guitars, and they're both going to be guitar players, not lead rhythm. And we're never going to be in the same part of the net. Yeah. If we look over and one person was playing a G down in the third fret, we go, okay, well, I got to do something else, you know?
Wow.
And that's what, you know, it's like I think Keith Richards describes it as weaving. No?
Yeah, well, it worked incredible. It inspired some guys in Pedro big time. Man, big
cool.
time. Big time. And when you get this next record done, please come back on the show. We can play it and talk about it.
I will, Mike. I love talking to you. We could talk for days.
Yep. But I know you got to go. You got an appointment coming up and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Cool, man.
Big love to you, brother.
Okay.
People,
if you're ever out here in Sin City, please, you know, give me a call, okay?
I probably will in March or April. I got a tour helping a guy, Mike Baghetto.
Yay.
At Mercury Lounge, cool. I think, sometime in the end of March. So.
Okay, I'm going to come.
You're on the list, bro. Totally.
Oh, that helps.
Absolutely.
Too, yeah.
People, it's been December 2nd, 2021, and just watch Peter. She'll keep you powder dry.